My name is Anthony Burgess. I'm a novelist, critic, and Shakespeare lover. The Book Society has invited me to talk to you about Shakespeare in this month and year, April 1964, in which the world is celebrating the 400th anniversary of Shakespeare's birth. 400 years have served to turn Shakespeare into a monster, an icon, a monument, a venerable, even a frightening image, but hardly a human being. I want to suggest to you that we do great wrong to Shakespeare's memory by this awed but rather bored veneration we give to him. He wrote to make money. The best way he knew of making money was to give pleasure. His concern was not with posterity, with scholars and schoolboys yet unborn, but with here and now, the pleasure of today's audience, the tinkle of today's gold and silver. We can't doubt for one moment that he gave a great deal of pleasure to the people who crowded into the Globe Theatre or the Blackfriars Theatre. If we don't get any pleasure out of him, and a lot of us say we don't, are we then to assume that our capacity for understanding him is somehow inferior to that of his contemporaries? Inferior to that of these shopkeepers and apprentices and soldiers and men of fashion and schoolboys who drank him down with such relish in the 1590s and the 1600s? Are we stupider today than people were 400 years ago? No, we're not. Of course we're not. We're just lazier. In fact, we've become too lazy even to wash the dirt out of our ears and listen. Shakespeare was a poet, a great magician with words, and he demands from us that we listen. In some ways, our age has let Shakespeare very badly down, for the words we hear every day, from politicians, on the radio, and from television personalities, from pop idols, are so little worth hearing that we think it's better to shut our ears to the weary clichés, the empty bombast, and let the art of listening go hang. And if we say, as we sometimes do, that we'd like to listen to Shakespeare, but that his words are old-fashioned and hard to understand, aren't we being just a little naive? After all, the language that's available to us today, the gloriously rich English language, is partly the creation of Shakespeare. We can hardly open our mouths without saying something Shakespearean. At one fell swoop, for instance, that's from Macbeth. Cruel to be kind, that's from Hamlet. One touch of nature makes the whole world kin. That's from Troilus and Cressida. Need I go on? Shakespeare's in our ears and in our mouths every day, and perhaps every hour of every day. We understand him all right. Time has made him part of ourselves. A little trouble can make us increase that part. I want you to think also of another aspect of Shakespeare. The fact that he was an ordinary man, a human being like ourselves, weak, suffering, capable of doubt and pain, and joy too, of course. A common man with a vast, irrelevant talent strapped to his back. His experiences with love and marriage, for instance, were those of any one of us. Except that he was perhaps unluckier than a lot of us, because I don't think his marriage was a very happy one. Inevitably, these experiences of his found their way into his plays and into his poems. He was wooed and won by a woman much older than himself, Anne Hathaway. And he seems to retell this story in his poem Venus and Adonis. He, Will, is the careless boy Adonis, who is too young to think about love. She, Anne, is the importunate goddess Venus, who's getting old and must have another lover soon. How Venus talks. She goes on and on and on and on, just like Katharina in The Taming of the Shrew, or Portia, for that matter, in The Merchant of Venice. I see Anne in many of his heroines, just as I see other members of his family dotted about the plays, in personality, sometimes in name, Edmund and Richard, his brothers, his sister Joan. As for his own son, Hamlet, who died when he was only 11, doesn't he reappear with a name only slightly altered, the melancholy intellectual prince of Denmark? Shakespeare speaks out of his own heart so often and so powerfully that he speaks into ours. Some of his sonnets say the last word about marriage, love, and friendship. Are we so stupid that we can't understand this clear and simple voice? I think not. We've just lost the art of listening to the truth beautifully expressed. Listen now to this sonnet. Let me not to the marriage of true minds admit impediments. Love is not love that alters when it alteration finds, or bends with the remover to remove. Oh, no. It is an ever-fixed mark that looks on tempests and is never shaken. It is the star to every wandering bark whose worth's unknown, although his height be taken. Love's not time's fool, though rosy lips and cheeks within his bending sickle's compass come. Love alters not with his brief hours and weeks, but bears it out even to the edge of doom. If this be error, and upon me proved, I never writ, nor no man ever loved.